Welcome to The Voice of Business, a podcast series from the CBI. I'm David Taylor, an editor and partner at Tortoise. For the time being, quite a long time, I suspect, we're focusing in these podcasts on the big decisions that people in business are having to make in this pandemic, their coronavirus judgment calls. None of us can remember a time exactly like this, when so many businesses will sink or swim. Owners, managers, and entrepreneurs will succeed or fail. Reputations will be won and lost. Each week, I'm going to talk to someone who's wrestled with a judgment, which is vital to their company. We'll talk about the practical implications, but I want to know what it meant, personally, for colleagues, and for the future of the firm. Everyone is finding their way in this lockdown. Everyone is hoping they make more good calls than bad ones. I want this podcast series to grow into a library of the kind of decisions we're all confronting in the most difficult circumstances we've ever encountered. So let's get going. My guest in this first episode is Anthony Sheriff, CEO of Princess Yachts. So I'm speaking from under a duvet in central London. And Anthony, you've already shown me you've got quite a magnificent view out of your study. Just paint a picture for us of where you are this morning.
Well, nominally, I'm in front of three computer screens. But if I peek up over them, I see the Great Muse Stone at Wembley Point, which is my connection to the office, because I can also see it from my office, but it's around the point. So I get one angle from the office and another angle from home.
Fantastic. And so Princess Yachts, then, just so people understand a little about the company, is based in Plymouth. It's on the south coast of England. It's been around since the mid-1960s. Clearly, it's a manufacturing company, but you're hardly making what we might think of as everyday products. Just give us a sense of what you make and how you make it.
So we produce about 250 luxury yachts a year, so that's more than one a day. Our yachts start at about £300,000 and go to prices that are well in excess of £6 or £7 million. And while we do make beautiful, ultra-high luxury products for our customers, and we're rather unique in that we also do all of the engineering, design, and development in-house, this is also a proper manufacturing business. We have an enormous amount of vertical integration. To make these 250 boats, we employ 3,000 people directly in Plymouth, and we make everything from scratch. We have raw wood and glass fiber and composite materials that come in the factory and luxury yachts that come out. I would reckon that we're one of the larger furniture manufacturers in the UK, just by dint of the fact that we produce all of the furniture by hand for each and every one of our boats.
That sounds like a remarkable scene. So is it one production line? Can we describe it as that? Does raw material come in one end and a finished article go out the other every day?
I wish it were that easy. We have a huge industrial footprint for a company the size of what we are. And that's also because our products are rather large. When you're building a 30-meter yacht, each production station is 30 meters long plus a few meters. This is really a true artisanal process. This is what people imagine when they close their eyes and they think of true British craftsmanship. The result is that we have a huge industrial enterprise because it requires 3,000 people to build 250 boats.
So I'm imagining you must have some members of your workforce who've been there for decades and who have truly quite rare skills.
We do indeed. And one of the largest challenges is that it's not a business where we can just bring people on if we have more demand for our boats and put them right to work. The complexity of assembly is very significant, and it takes many months for somebody to begin to become productive so that they can start to add value on the fit-out line. And you said some of the people have been there for many years. We have a couple of cases of three generations of a family all working in Princess at the same time.
That's wonderful. That's really, it's something very romantic, I think, about the idea that a place like Plymouth, which is so steeped in a maritime heritage, still has this work going on. And the idea of generations working side by side is pretty wonderful.
We literally bump into our history on a daily basis. One of our sites, which we call South Yard, where we build our largest yachts, is on the exact plot of land where Sir Francis Drake kept the British naval fleet. And one of the buildings that we use to build mock-ups for our boats, meaning full-scale models of every cabin of every boat, is the original ropery, where the British Navy made the ropes. And if you know anything about the history of ropes, the expression the red thread in an argument came from Navy ropes, where they used to put a red thread in the rope. We even have a hanging cell in one of our buildings, which the British Navy used to hang the French and Spanish prisoners.
I'm assuming HR has something to say about that these days.
Health and safety.
And going into 2020, this was a business that was roaring. I know that you had a great order book and that you'd also really expanded your workforce over about 2 years, had you not?
Yes, we've had a really good run over the last few years. We've had from time to time some hiccups as we've tried to transform the production system from a more traditional approach to an even higher quality approach, which we've now successfully done. But from 2016 until now, we've increased the size of our workforce by about 50%, and we've increased our turnover by 75%. And as you mentioned, we're sitting on a very comfortable order book that extends about 18 months, which is a good position to be in coming into this situation we all find ourselves in.
So when did you realize C-19 was going to hit you?
We started to get concerned more from a commercial standpoint right at the very beginning, and we started to monitor demand very, very carefully. And so we started to talk about what measures we should be taking internally to keep our team safe. And in the end of February, we stopped all international travel. We started to put in plans to have people to work from home if that were to be necessary.
And in the first iteration of your plan to cope with this, did you envisage that your production would continue and that you would still be able to have people on the factory floor?
To be honest, it was only around the second or third week in March that we started to realize that this may need to shut down. And that was coming from the experience of looking at what was happening in Italy, saying if this is happening there and if it happens here, the same antidotes are going to be applied and we are going to be locked down. And how are we going to be able to build yachts in the way we currently build them? So we started to think about doing things differently. And then when the Prime Minister came on and told people to lock down, we shut down the business the next day.
So that was March the 24th that you shut down. So what was the biggest decision you felt you had to take in that 24-hour period?
To shut down the business, which felt a little bit like jumping off of a cliff and not knowing whether you had a parachute on your back. There was no real guarantees of any government programs. Most of the salaried workforce was working from at home from the week before because we could. And it was very difficult to look in the mirror with a straight face and say, I'm at home safe, but I'm going to send 2,500 people into the factories and they can sort themselves out. And the last thing we wanted was to have a hot spot of infections happening because of our indifference.
And did you have a sense at that point that you would be able to continue to pay people's wages yourselves, regardless of what flowed from government?
If we had no support from government, we would have had a certain degree of lifeline, a couple of months, let's say. Don't forget, for a company our size, we have an inordinate amount of team members. So our revenue per person is relatively low because we are very, very highly vertically integrated. And so our carrying costs are much higher than many of our competitors. It hurts.
So it essentially, put simply, it takes a lot of people to make your yachts and a lot of your cost is through your wage bill.
That's correct. One of the things that people don't realize as clearly as they should, we're a manufacturing business. And if we have closed down our manufacturing operations, we have no way of bringing any money at all into the company. Our cash flow stops.
There's two things I'd like to pick up on there. Firstly, how you communicated to your workforce, because clearly there's a double anxiety. People are worried about their health and people are worried about their livelihood. How do you manage to communicate that in a way that is empathetic?
Well, we start by telling them the truth. There's no point in trying to create an image of something that's not real. We're communicating with them constantly. I have a video brief that goes out once a week that just gets everybody up to date on what's going on for all those that are furloughed. And we furloughed 2,920 out of 3,000 people. We have regular, which means literally daily, discussions with the Works Committee and regular discussions with our union as well, but also making sure that people are okay. So there's a lot of communication going on from the people who are working and also from the people who to the people who are not working at the moment.
And have you, as a company, topped up the furlough payment for your staff?
The furlough rules are a little bit unclear, and they're becoming clearer every day. So in our initial viewpoint, we were going to pay 80% of salary, but without limit. There's now a new definition which talks about regular wages, and we're just working through it. Our inclination is that we will pay 80% of regular wages without limit.
Right. And at the top end of your company, yourself included, what sacrifices have you made?
So everybody in the company is taking a 20% pay cut for this period of time.
Got it. Right. My understanding is that you would consider yourselves to be a sort of medium-sized company, and that the initial anxiety was that there was a sort of safety net for small businesses, and there was a mechanism for, as it were, too big to fail entities, but that you were worried you might fall between the gaps. Is that right?
The government, I think, did a fantastic job at throwing out a large number and saying, we're here to support British business right at the very beginning. And that helped to alleviate a lot of anxiety. And that was fantastic. What I really didn't understand, putting a simpleton hat on, is why that is not proportionate to everybody. Why are they picking and choosing certain sizes of companies are going to get support and others won't? And so we asked that question. Yeah, we had it on two sides. The initial plan, we were much larger than 45 million, and we were much smaller than an investment grade company. Yet even with some of our small suppliers who were coming to us asking for help, and we said, well, you can get some help from the government. You're under 45 million. The CEO would say, yeah, but they want me to put my house on as collateral. And I'm not even an owner of the company. I'm just the CEO. What are they thinking? And so I think it was a real disconnect in the understanding of how important mid-sized companies are to the British economy, not just as a generator of wealth and value add, but also, frankly, as a customer to many of the small companies who they are trying to support.
Anthony, you've spoken very eloquently about Princess's place in the heritage of Plymouth and this amazing maritime tradition. I wonder what this period of time has told you about really the nature of a business and its relationship with its community, but also a sense of the burdens and duties that you have as a person running a business towards really the family of employees, the people who you work with every day.
It's extraordinarily important for us. We are a huge part of Plymouth. We employ 3,000 people in the Plymouth area, and these 3,000 people have families, and the families and them support businesses. So when you look at the immediate chain of our impact on Plymouth, it's pretty much extends to every part of the city. And so ensuring the health and well-being and the prosperity of our workforce is part and parcel with the economic growth of the city. And so we work very closely with the council to see how we can help in this time. We had a call very early on after we shut down to talk about what we were doing. We had just ordered a large amount of personal protective equipment, and we handed it all over to the council. It's creating a bit of a problem now as we get ready for starting back up again, but at the time it felt like the right thing to do. And rather than give them to one person in particular, we just gave them to the city and asked them to distribute it as they saw fit.
And again, I suppose a lot of us are experiencing the challenges, but also the possibilities of working remotely. Do you think in a curious way, you as a team might have pulled closer together, even though you're physically apart?
Absolutely. I haven't seen any of my management team or anybody in the company for almost a month now, but I do see them on an array of boxes on my computer screens in front of me when I'm not looking over the screens at the beautiful view. And our communication has become much more fluent and fluid in this time than it was before, where we'd be in the same office, but we could never seem to find the time to sit down together and discuss the business. Now we're constantly discussing the business, and those team members are talking with their team continually throughout the day. So it's working quite well.
It's the bonding experience of having gone through all of this together as a joint enterprise, I think, which is going to give all of us possibilities for how we work next.
It needs to be successful. It needs to be successful. And getting back in production, coming back from this, is frankly going to be a lot more complicated than turning everything off, which wasn't easy. But now is where the rubber is going to hit the road.
Well, Anthony, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you've got your staff call in a second. I really appreciate you showing me the view out of your window, which was very uplifting. And we're all going to be rooting for you going forward in the next weeks and months.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care.